The Natural Nurse with Ellen Kamai and Dr. Z, Mondays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, your host today. Dr. Kamai has the day off, and we have an exciting guest here. We have Dr. Mikhail Friedman. He's author of Fundamentals of Naturopathic Endocrinology, and he's also one of the founders of WTS Meds and Restorative Medicines. We're going to be talking about endocrinological issues, the endocrine system, and what we can do about it to bring balance to a disturbed system, which often is the genesis of many, many different pathologies. Dr. Friedman, are you there?
Hey, good morning.
Hey, okay.
Good afternoon.
Let's talk a little bit about the endocrine system, Mikhail. Tell us a little bit about how the allopathic community looks at the endocrine system sort of in, as compartmentalized, whereas how naturopathic doctors sort of look at how the systems interrelate to each other.
Well, in conventional medicine, to have a clinically isolated disease from an endocrinological point of view, you have to have just certain abnormal lab tests, and that's one factor. And naturopathic medicine looks at lab tests as well, but it also looks at other factors, such as how people feel and their symptoms, and also looks at another set of lab tests which are not always used by regular medicine, which looks at more subtle defects in the endocrine system, which can be culprits in patients' lack of wellness. And also one thing with regular conventional medicine, they don't really look at the how one endocrine thing affects the other. So if naturopathic, we notice that the whole body as a whole has a multitude of pathways which connect. So for example, the thyroid, once the thyroid's not working well, almost always the adrenals won't be working as well. And they play on each other, so it's important to address both functions. And if you go to a regular medicine doctor and the thyroid is not doing well, they would just treat it strictly with a thyroid and not necessarily look at the adrenal unless it was severely debilitated.
Yeah, that's interesting that they look at severe debilitations versus
health
balances. Like, let's look at health, exactly. Let's take example, the thyroid. I know you've done a tremendous amount of research, you with Dr. Wilson and other colleagues, in writing your book. What's fascinating to me is how many people are slipping through the cracks with thyroid disease. So take us through how, like, a typical patient with thyroid disease that either has normal levels on the blood, normal T3 and T4 and TSH, maybe you can define those for people, and yet they still feel crummy. They might have a lot of different symptoms. Maybe you can review some of those symptoms of thyroid dysfunction. And then how temperature and restoring normal temperature plays a role in the health of the thyroid.
First, I'll just review the basic the science of the lab tests, just as a starting point. So
right.
The thyroid produces primarily two hormones. It produces T3 and T4. And then after the thyroid produces, it goes in the blood, and about 80% of that T4 gets converted primarily in the liver and the kidneys to T3. And T3 is the active thyroid hormone. Now, when the T3 level or T4 levels are low, which means the output of the thyroid is low of these hormones, the pituitary will start increasing a protein messenger, which is called TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone. And then the TSH will increase to start stimulating the thyroid to produce more of these hormones. In conventional medicine, when the TSH is high and the T3 and T4 levels are still normal, it's what's considered subclinical hypothyroidism. So at this point, their thyroid is still producing enough T3 and T4, but the there's an indication that something is going awry. And usually when the TSH is high and the T3 and T4 is normal, the person will eventually become, and what's considered in regular medicine, clinically hypothyroid within usually a year or two. So a lot of people who don't feel well and the doctor says their tests are fine, they're just looking at one aspect of the test and ignoring the fact that they're probably not going to be fine from a medical point of view even another year or two. And another test which often is ignored is the antibodies, and there's also a lot of antibodies. There's two major antibodies which destroy the thyroid, and a lot of women will have these antibodies just in a low level, and it just starts creeping up to a high enough level eventually where the thyroid's not producing enough, and then it becomes clinically hypothyroid. And as naturopathic doctors, we do look at the lab test to see if it's clinically hypothyroid, to see what the levels of T3 are and T4 and TSH, but we also look at it more at a more of the nuances, because, for example, if the T3 and T4 might not be at optimal ranges, then patients will feel better by trying to increase those levels. And secondly, even if those T3 and T4 levels are completely normal, but they're exhibiting symptoms of hypothyroidism, and there's no other major obvious cause which the doctor can find, we'll treat it, the patient with hypothyroidism. The symptoms of hypothyroidism, whether it shows up on the blood test or not, or as feeling cold, low body temperature, anxiety, depression, headaches, muscle aches, carpal tunnel syndrome. There's a whole variety of symptoms related to low metabolism. And one of the quickest ways to see if someone has low metabolism is simply to test their temperature. Body temperature traditionally is considered normal at 98.6, but as the years have gone by, in the last 20 years, body temperature has gone down, and at most people's body temperature now, only about 8% of people have a body temperature of 98.6. And I think this is actually, this lowering body temperature over the group of people doesn't mean that it's normal to be less than 98.6. It just means a lot of people are not as well as we used to be. And when someone has low metabolism, the metabolic rate is lower, and that means all the enzymes don't work as well at the ideal body temperature. So it's, and then you'll have a whole host of symptoms, as I mentioned before. So one thing to do is just take a thermometer and take your temperature 3 times a day for 3 days in a row and see what the average temperature is. I've had patients who've had as low as like 96.1, 95.9, and regular medicine looks at body temperature and a much more strict, they looked only at the more severe cases. If someone has 100, over 100, they think someone has a fever, and if someone's at 103, they want to bring it down, and 105, you can start going into a seizure, and if someone's at 95, it's considered significant if someone has, they'll be in hypothermia, which is dangerous. But there's a whole range in there, 95.9, 96, 96.5, 97, which a lot of people are at, and they're not considered medically significant because, they're not going to die from it, but they're not necessarily going to feel well. And this is one thing as a holistic doctor we would look at. We look at how the patient feels, and it's not just a blood test.
That was very good. Excellent. But tell us, why would the thyroid not be working if people are producing the hormones? Are there factors like on the receptor sites on the cells or on the tissue sites that could be impeding the ability of the thyroid to stoke up the metabolism, so to speak?
Yes. So the thyroid can be producing enough T4 and T3, but what really matters is it going into the cells. And T3 is an unusual hormone because it actually works, does not stimulate the receptor sites on the cell, it stimulates intracellular receptor sites. So it actually stimulates, it actually goes in the cell to stimulate cells. And that's one reason it's hard to test for T3, because when you're circulating, when you're doing a blood test, you're only testing a sample of blood at that one moment. But to find really the true value of T3, you'd have to look at all the cells throughout the body and how much of it's actually in the cells, and that you can't always do in a blood test. So the reason, there's different theories about why can have someone have a normal T3 blood test but do so well by taking higher amounts of T3? And some of this information is not just in alternative medicine, it's actually in the regular conventional journals. They're calling it hypothyroidism type 2, just as there's diabetes. They talk about diabetes and insulin resistance. Now they're talking about hypothyroidism with thyroid resistance. And one speculation is that there is a receptor site abnormality. That's one current theory, that the receptor sites for T3 are just not working well. And the second theory out is that there's something called blood coagulation, where the blood is too thick and the T3 is not able to flow through the blood well and not stimulate the receptor sites. And a third theory also is that there's a high level of reverse T3, which is an isomer of T3, which is basically a different molecular structure of T3, which acts to counteract the effect of T3. So the body produces two things, T3 and reverse T3. And reverse T3 does the exact opposite of T3. It's kind of the yin and the
yang. It's like Jekyll and Hyde, sort
yep.
of, you know?
So, for example, when someone is under a lot of stress, or even, let's say, when someone dies, reverse T3 will increase and T3 levels will go down, and the body will eventually slow down and will feel more tired. And this is a normal part of grieving. But what happens is sometimes people are in grief and it doesn't resolve, and sometimes they're still tired, 6 months later. This is a course of action which can be really well implicated by using T3, that patients will feel significantly better.
And there's other factors that influence the T3, like I was reading in your book that
infections.
High stress and infections and even heavy metals and maybe even food allergies like gliadin and gluten and things like that all maybe play a factor in this.
It is. There's a lot of implication that fibromyalgia with a muscle pain has to do with low metabolism. And in low metabolism, they're finding that in fibromyalgia, there's often implicated that there's a certain type of infection. And infections, like chronic Epstein-Barr, they will produce certain cytokines, which are immunomodulator chemicals, which are produced in the body. And in high levels, inhibit thyroid hormone production and the conversion of T3. And so that's why a lot of people who have a chronic infection eventually will have low body temperature because of the cytokines. And also another thing is heavy metals. The conversion of T4 to T3 is completely significantly inhibited by mercury, cadmium, and lead. And as mentioned before, stress. When someone has high amounts of stress, they'll have high amounts of cortisol. And cortisol will inhibit the conversion from T4 to T3. They did two studies with T4 and T3 and reverse T3. One study was done with military cadets. They put them under huge amounts of stress, which is part of military training, and food deprivation, sleep deprivation, and huge amounts of psychological trauma. And they measured their thyroid hormones and found that these people, these military cadets, would have high amounts of reverse T3 and low amounts of T3. And the interesting thing was that 3 weeks after the training for the military cadets had happened, they could still see the effects in the body, could still see the high amounts of reverse T3. Another example was medical students. I mean, so many medical students, including myself, by the time they graduate, get tired. And
me too. It took many years to get my health back together in order to feel my old self again.
Yeah, same here. And they found that during the final exams of medical students, that by the time the last exam was done, the T3 levels had gone down and reverse T3 would be higher. And in reverse T3 would go gradually higher from exam to exam to the last day of exam and peak on the last day of exam.
Wow. Just goes to show you how important it is to manage stress and how, in regular conventional medicine, they're not looking at these things. Like you said, they're kind of looking at it compartmentalized, sort of, let's treat the thyroid, but let's not do detoxification, stress management,
right,
reframing and yoga therapy, rebuilding with some of the herbs that we'll talk about in a few minutes that kind of reset the adrenals. And none of that's looked at. So that's why I love your book. You know, it's a very holistic way of looking at the endocrine system. And I found that a lot of the your trainings have helped me with patients and many doctors across the world. For I understand you're doing you're having a big conference in Nevada coming up. No, Utah. Excuse me.
And you're speaking at it.
And I don't know what state it's in. No, I'm only joking. Oh God. No, tell us a little bit about it.
We put on a conference every year, and about 200 physicians come, and it's a 4-day training. And it's primarily focused, initially was on endocrinology. It was mostly on thyroid and adrenals, but now we've been expanding it to just holistic medicine in general, anything which helps restore health. And so there's a big focus on herbal medicine and bioidentical hormones and lifestyle, and this time we have a class from a great man called Paul Fleischman, who's a psychiatrist retired psychiatrist from Yale, who has incorporated a lot of spirituality into medicine.
Right.
And his whole focus and practice was actually helping physicians learn how to handle stress so they can treat patients better.
It's wonderful. Because we could see what happens with all those things. Because, you know, when you disrupt one, basically, I guess the bottom line is when you disrupt one part of the endocrine system, the other parts become very, very disrupted. Like, I'll give you an interesting example that I know you talk about in your book, and we've talked about it personally. Like, there's an amino acid called tyrosine and phenylalanine, which is like one of the building blocks of the thyroid, but it's very interesting that tyrosine is an integral amino acid for also the adrenal function in helping that, and also it's
producing that catecholamine thing.
That's right. And it's so that increases dopamine and things like that. And it's also important for the energy cycle of the cells, the Krebs cycle or the citric acid cycle. And believe it or not, I just read an article that it's very important in the production of coenzyme Q10.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things, if the patient, if their thyroid's low, or maybe they're not eating well, or they're having malabsorption of some of these key amino acids, it's going to affect many, many things that maybe an allopathic doctor would treat with 4 or 5 different medications, not looking at the similarity and the common thread that sort of interweaves these maladies.
Absolutely. I assume it's okay, but I want to mention that Dr. Zampirin was my doctor, and that's how I got into natural medicine. And I think my case really illustrates exactly what you're talking about, because I had a whole host of symptoms, and I had digestive symptoms, and I had mostly digestive symptoms were quite severe, and some liver issues, and that's why I came in for treatment. And I also had other things like allergies, severe allergies. And 3 months after helping my digestive symptoms and my liver, they got better. But not only that, my allergy completely went, like 95% went away. And, you know, even 20 years later now, Jesus, 20 years since I saw you, Dr. Z.
Wow.
I'm good. I don't
that's
have allergies.
Great.
And I think that's an example where, you know, you treated these other things, but something else went away. And that's the whole thing, what I call what's the great exciting thing about naturopathic medicine is that it has side benefits usually instead of side effects. And the side benefit of treating my digestive issues was my allergies went away.
That's wonderful to inspire you so much that you embarked in this as your whole career and started writing and all these wonderful things. It's such a wonderful pleasure to have you on the program here. Let's talk a little bit about, we talked about the thyroid. Let's talk a little bit about the adrenals, and then I want to talk about diabetes, because I know you have, that was another important condition which got you interested in endocrinology. I know you had successfully managed quite a number of cases of diabetes, and that inspired you. So let's talk about the adrenals. So now someone's under a lot of stress. and they come in to the doctor. Now, what are some of the symptoms that somebody with adrenal problems are going to manifest that's going to lead the doctor to maybe target the adrenals for therapy?
Well, again, it depends on what doctor you're talking about. Because in conventional medicine, I was talking to an endocrinologist, and he was saying that true adrenal disease is extremely rare from his perspective in regular medicine. I mean, he says they, even as an endocrinologist whose specialty is endocrine diseases, they said it's so rare to really find truly diagnosed adrenal disease from their perspective. So, but, you know, Dr. Z and I would disagree on that. It's just that adrenal conditions exist a lot. It's just there's a lot more subtle diseases of adrenals which does not cause someone to die. I mean, regular medicine just thinks about it. If it's a really serious disease, like, okay, you got adrenal tumor, okay, let's take it out. But, you know, we're talking about wellness, and a lot of people will have adrenal conditions. So one thing which we look at is we can look at the output of the adrenal glands. We might measure their DHA levels, the cortisol levels, pregnenolone, all the different steroid hormones which come out of the adrenals. Clinically, a lot of these patients, there's different phases. In the beginning phase, there's the alarm phase when someone's under a lot of stress. These patients tend to be extremely nervous and anxious. But eventually, if someone gets nervous and anxious for many years, they just get extremely tired. And one of the symptoms, which is, I think, pretty common, is that after long-term stress, people have low blood pressure, and they get dizzy and weak, and if they stand up quickly, they get very lightheaded, and often insomnia are different. And by helping treating the adrenals, often these symptoms can get better. So, you know, you can give people one of the treatments for adrenal is really helping with calming the nerves. So that's why it's really important to help giving, you know, valerian and different herbs like that, which will help calm the person, and also tonic herbs. A lot of the tonic herbs which you hear in traditional medicine, whether in China or around the world, like ginseng, those are herbs for the adrenals. They help tonify and they help give people energy. And with adrenal tonic herbs, you have to take them for a long time to have an effect. It's not a herb which has an effect in a day. You have to take it for, you know, it's a daily herb, kind of like the way I look at it, a multivitamin. You take your adaptogenic herbs which help tonify the adrenals.
But a lot of people drink coffee to, you know, get energy, Dr. Friedman. You know, they feel like they get 2 o'clock or 4 o'clock
right.
low, and they need the coffee, kind of wakes them up. What's actually going on there, and what is the detrimental effects of the caffeine, and what would be a better approach?
I remember in medical school, I remember one night we had an exam in biochemistry, and we had to know the biochemistry of coffee and how it increases the ATP production.
Uh-huh.
I remember I was feeling really tired. I remember drinking a cup of coffee to learn how to memorize the effects of what coffee does. But coffee stimulates the adrenal glands and stimulates production of energy. But the way I look at it is people drink a lot of coffee and get kind of addicted to it, which a lot of people do, is they're taking a loan out. They're taking energy out of the body, which it doesn't have. So eventually you have to pay it back. So you have to. So I think, you know, coffee in moderation is okay, but people who drink it all the time and every day, I think it actually burns out the adrenals, and it's better to give tonic herbs, you know, which actually strengthen and tonify the adrenals to produce energy on its own rather than stimulating it. You know, so stimulants are hard on the adrenal system.
Right. They kind of, the way I think about it is they're sort of, you know, how like when you're, you know, doing the dishes or whatever, and you squeeze in a sponge and you want to wring it out, the coffee kind of wrings out that last bit of water,
right.
but it dries out the system. It's,
right.
It's starving the body of what it needs.
Right.
Which it means you're going to need more amino acids and other types of treatments to rebuild the adrenals at that point. So when people come in for the adrenals, besides the ginseng or ashwagandha we didn't talk about. That's a fascinating one from India. Do you ever use ashwagandha on
patients? Oh, yeah. Ashwagandha is great. I mean, the traditional recipe is you take a tablespoon of ashwagandha and put it in a cup of warm milk. That's how they drink in India. A lot of people here are lactose intolerant, so I don't always recommend that. But ashwagandha, you know, it's definitely a great herb, and it's what's called amphoteric, which helps balance things if it's high or low. So if someone has... the reason I think ashwagandha is ideal for adrenals is it not only tonifies adrenals, but it also helps relax. It's something called nervine, which has an action of relaxing the person, and it's also tonifying. So that's why I think it's an ideal herb for...
Right. It's not going to relax you where you fall asleep, but it's going to give you an appropriate response to stress. That's very interesting. I love ashwagandha. I think it's a wonderful plant.
We're growing it now, and it grows right here in Vermont now. Organic farms are growing. There's an organic farm right here grows it. Ashwagandha, and traditionally grows in India, but it can actually grow it in Northeast.
And then do they have to bring it in the greenhouse, I guess, because it's considered kind of a semi-tropical plant, like in the summer, I guess, I mean in the winter?
No, they're able to have it grow without putting it in the greenhouse. I was quite surprised.
Wow, I got to find out how they do that over the winter, how they overwinter it. Now, lastly, the diabetes is a huge problem in society. We see so much of this problem where people are developing what they call Syndrome X and problems like that, and then they go on to become a diabetic, type 2 diabetic. Can you explain to people like how this begins, sort of maybe from childhood and using corn syrup and lots of sugars and things like that, and then how it may progress and how you've been able to help people?
So there's two types of diabetes. There's type 2 and type 1. And type 1...
Oh, you know what? I hear some music.
Okay.
Mikhail, I think we need to take a break. Then I know you need to make another call back. Okay, so stay tuned, folks, for more Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, everybody. This is Richard Martin of Richard Martin's Wake Up Call. I'm on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com twice a week on Mondays and Fridays at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to guide you and hold your hand through the worst economic catastrophe of all time. I predicted this right here on PRN back in 2005, along with the housing meltdown. Listen in and hear how this calamity is about to get much worse, and hear me suggest ways in which you can sidestep a large part of the horror. Call in and have your questions answered in real time. Let's see this thing through together. ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com hosts my show Mondays and Fridays at 10 a.m. EST right here.
Cotel with Sierra Club Radio. Tune in Fridays at 11 a.m. Eastern on the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com to hear interviews with green authors, activists, politicians, celebrities, and more.
Hi, this is Mike Fader. I'm doing a new show here on PRN every Thursday following Gary Null from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time. It's called The Turning Point. What will we talk about? Well, everything, from birth to death and most things in between. I'll be using stories in the news and personal observations from my own life. And from time to time, I'll be taking your calls. So please join me, Mike Fader, every Thursday from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time for The Turning Point on PRN.
Do Join us, Bruce and Marianne Curtis, Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network for Truth and Freedom. We present provocative conversations with the world's most brilliant minds in the areas of holistic health, spiritual wisdom, politics, and a host of other topics. Some of our topics include the latest work in non-invasive therapy on the brain, the truth beneath the global economic meltdown, healing power of the breath, and the sublime truth beyond all religious traditions. In this age of transformation, we need to look beneath the surface appearance of things to see the underlying reality. For material that is always illuminating and often liberating, tune in to Truth and Freedom on the Progressive Radio Network Fridays at 3 p.m.
You are listening to Progressive Radio Network.
Okay, and we're back with Dr. Michael Friedman, and he's the author of Fundamentals of Naturopathic Endocrinology, and you're listening, of course, to the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, your host. Dr. Kamai, the Natural Nurse, has the day off, and we're starting to talk about diabetes in the last, say, 10 minutes of the program, Dr. Friedman. So yeah. I know one of your first patients was a severe diabetic that you were able to help with herbal medicine, so tell us about that case and talk about, you know, sort of why this is a big societal problem and what holistic medicine can do for it.
Well, one of my first patients, it was up in Canada. She had about 20 different diseases. No exaggeration.
Wow.
20 diseases. She had Parkinson's. Kidney disease, eye disease, neuropathy, of course diabetes, and a whole host of other hypothyroidism and congestive heart failure. She had it all. And when she first came, I just felt kind of overwhelmed, and I was like, well, you know, the drugs aren't helping and this and that. So we put her on a really high dose of different herbal botanicals of tinctures and extracts. And it took about 4 or 5 months, and her blood sugar went significantly lower to the point where eventually it practically went to the normal range, especially with really a strict diet of a high protein and low carbohydrate. And after her blood sugar went down, we started working on our kidney disease, and I gave her different herbs for the kidneys, like goldenrod, and eventually her creatinine got better and her kidney function got better. And then we also helped try to stabilize her heart arrhythmia with certain herbs, and that worked. And you know, this was one of my first patients when I was still in school, in medical school, and it opened my eye. I was like, wow, like, you mean people who can't get better with these serious diseases and all those pharmaceuticals, but can get better in like 3 months, you know, like right here in the clinic with giving herbs. It just kind of opened my eyes, like, oh, people kind of think, like, you know, herbal medicine, natural medicine, it's more for like you know, it's a supplemental treatment to the conventional treatment. But I was like, this is the treatment. I mean, this is a real treatment on its own. This is, and it actually works really well. And it covers a lot of spots which conventional medicine wasn't able to help at all. And so it opened my eye that, you know, there's a place for this which is, you know, undervalued. And and it really brings up to what you're talking about right now, because the world right now, people are getting more and more diabetes, and the main type of diabetes which people are getting more and more of right now is, it has to do with diet and lifestyle. And there's so many children now becoming diabetic type 2, which was considered, you know, extremely rare like 20 years ago. And, you know, a few words, I would say it's corn syrup. I mean, it's a few words. It says, what are people doing? What are they eating? It's junk food, and it's fast food, junk food. And all the corn syrup and sodas, and this is primarily a disease of the modern diet. And people, if they ate a traditional diet, pretty much would not have this. And the second thing is, if people you know, exercised in a more traditional way, which people walked and not just drove around in cars and went and drank sodas all day, that would be, it's really a diet and lifestyle, pretty much. And
yeah.
And I think it's so ingrained that our society has so been conditioned to sell to the public to buy more and more, and buy more, you know, junk food, more soda, that we all go ahead and do it. So it's become pretty much it's mainstream now to become unhealthy, and so it's a paradigm shift where it's considered normal to not be well.
Yeah, and I think all that uses up quite a number of nutrients, which, you know, supposedly helps us manage the sugar. Like chromium is a big one. I know you talk about it in
right.
your book. There's chromium deficiencies,
yeah.
very common.
Chromium, yeah, absolutely. Vanadium. And yeah, people often use like 200 micrograms of chromium, but I think really a therapeutic level is in the milligram ranges, like 1 or 2 milligrams a day of chromium. For therapeutic doses to really have an effect.
Yes, especially if they have trouble or they're very low in that. And so by avoiding the, you know, corn syrup and things like that, that's very important in exercising, because that's the keys. In the last 5 minutes we have of the program, what herbs did you find or have you found in your practice and certainly in researching the book that seems to be the best herbs for people with diabetes type 2?
Well, there's quite a few different herbs in different cultures work really well, and I think the key is taking a high amount of them for a long period of time. Restoring blood sugar issues takes a while. It takes months. It's not like someone can take a pill and then the next day their blood sugar is back to normal. It doesn't work. It's not like insulin. The key is taking it long term. Some of my favorite herbs I use is opoponics, which is devil's club. It grows in Northwest. That helps balance blood sugar, and I use that for a lot of the herbs, the herbs I use for hyperglycemia are also the same herbs I use for hypoglycemia.
Again, that balancing effect you mentioned.
They're amphoteric, so they help regulate it. So gymnema, there's a lot of great Ayurvedic herbs from India which help blood sugar. Jambul, gymnema, and devil's club are pretty much the herbs which I use. There's one herb called Pterocarpus marsupium, quino, which has had a lot of literature about, which has really a quick effect. Have you used that, Dr. Z?
Yes, I've actually used that in Jamaica. That was one of the herbs that the shaman gave me to help me, because that has a lot of tannins in it. So, of course, they use it for dysentery, the maroon healers, but fascinating. It probably has some ethnobotanical use for diabetes as well.
Right. So, and I just want to stress that, you know, the herbs work really well. They just have to take them long-term. And another herb which grows in the southwest United States is nopal. And some of the indigenous populations on the reservations are using prickly pear, which is Nepal, the fruit. And you can get the prickly pear fruit. And there is a place, if you even go on the internet, it's called Arizona Cactus Ranch.
Mm.
And you can get the pure puree of these prickly pear fruits. And you can drink, if you drink, I think 2 tablespoons a day, that's what the physicians on the reservations are using for diabetes type 2. It works really well. It takes about a month, I would say.
That's great that they're using the prickly pear. There's some prickly pears that'll grow up north, too. It really is an amazingly hardy cactus. So what would you say, in summary of our program here, as far as advice for people that are not feeling well? They're going to their endocrinologist, their MD, and they're saying, well, you know, your labs are normal. I don't know what's going on with you. I mean, you know, clearly you're not feeling well, but we can't figure it out.
One thing to do is you could, if you're in the Connecticut area, you could see Dr. Z. But you could go look for a naturopathic physician. There's a website called naturopathic.org.
Yeah.
There's also one thing which might is more as an educational resource. My website, restorativemedicine.com. org also has a lot of educational information. It has my whole textbook online, and it's free.
Wow, that's so wonderful.
You can review all the articles and review the whole endocrine things for free and read that. And then there's other articles in there which are all for free. And there's actually even MP3 presentations which you can hear from various physicians who specialize in endocrinology and talk about different case studies they've treated. So that's a good resource as well.
Yeah, and also people, you know, when they're on medications, there has to be, they should be under the care of a professional that knows about proper weaning, because I'm sure when people come to see you or other physicians who you've trained, they're already on a whole host of medications for their thyroid and diabetes and other things like that. And then to just take the herbs by yourself can sometimes create some issues, and not to say that it's a problem with the herbs, it's actually a problem with probably the medications and the combination. So that you have to be under professional guidance to...
I agree. I don't recommend anyone to stop their endocrine drugs, that for sure. I mean, if someone's diabetic and they're type 1 and they stop their insulin to take a herb, you could die. I mean,
yeah.
It's as simple as that. So, you know, and again, that insulin for type 1 is totally different. The herbs I was telling you was talking about was for type 2, and that's, you know, still, someone's under drugs, they still might need the drugs, but eventually, with the proper guidance, they might be eventually able to wean off the drugs.
Right, because the drugs are kind of like a crutch, and, you know, sometimes when you whack up your knee or your ankle, you need a crutch for a couple months even sometimes until you strengthen out your joints enough so that you can walk on your own. It's the same way with these medications. Sometimes there has to be an appropriate weaning process. So why don't you give out your information one more time, Dr. Friedman, and it's been a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you. Well, our website is restorativemedicine.org, and that's primarily an educational website. There's no products to buy for the public, but it's a place. You also listen to a lot of physicians which are using our protocols throughout the states.
Great, and thanks very much for,
thank
for
you.
Taking the time in your busy day to be with us. And folks listening out there, thank you again for listening to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.org. And this is Dr. Z signing out. Dr. Kamai will be joining, I guess, you next week. And just wanted to take this time to wish you and your loved ones health and happiness. Be well.
Be well. Bye-bye.
Have a good one.